the soccer ball at me with a snarl that became a reluctant smile when I caught it with the side of my foot and booted it gently back. "I just wanted to speak to you for a second."
"Y'all gotta wait, then. I ain't decent."
Her head disappeared. I waited. Rosette kicked the soccer ball high and wide this time.
"Chamba!"
But I managed to catch it on one palm before it hit the house.
"I ain't supposed to use your hands, dirty old sumbitch," she said. "That's a penalty." "Rosette, what I told you about that goddamn mouth?"
Moms came out on the stoop, securing a filmy yellow scarf over her rollers. It made them look like cocooned insects, the kind that might be poisonous when they hatched.
"Dirty old fucking sumbitch!"
Rosette shrieked, and then scampered up Mercedes Street in the direction of the Monkey Ward warehouse, kicking her soccer ball and laughing maniacally.
"What you want?"
Mom's was 22, going on 50. Several of her teeth were gone, and she had the fading remains of a black eye. "Want to ask you some questions?" I said.
"What makes my business your business?"
I took out my wallet and offered her a $5 bill. "Ask me no questions, and I'll tell you no lies."
"You ain't from around here. You sound like a Yankee."
"Do you want this money or not, missus?"
"Depends on the questions. I ain't telling you my goddamn bra size."
"I want to know how long you've been here for a start."
"This place? 6 weeks, I guess. Harry thought he might catch on at the Monkey Ward warehouse, but they ain't hiring. So he went on over to Manpower. You know where that is?"
"Day labor?"
"Yeah, and he working with a bunch of niggers. $9 a day working with a bunch of goddamn niggers side of the road. He says it's like being a West Texas correctional again."
"How much rent do you pay?"
$50 a month.
"Furnished?"
"Semi. Well, you could say. Got a goddamn bed and a goddamn gas stove, gonna kill us all, most likely. And I ain't taking you in, so don't ask. I don't know you from goddamn Adam."
"Did it come with lamps and such?"
"You're crazy, mister."
"Did it?"
"Yeah, couple. One that works and one that didn't." "I ain't staying here, be goddamned if I will. He tell how he don't want to move back in with my mama down Moselle, but tough titty said the kitty. I ain't staying here. You smell this place?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"That ain't nothing but shit, Sonny Jim. Not cat shit, not dog shit. That's people shit. Work with niggers, that's one thing, but live like one? No, sir. You done?"
I wasn't quite, although I wished I were. I was disgusted by her. And disgusted with myself for daring to judge. She was a prisoner of her time, her choices, and this shit-smelling street. But it was the rollers under the yellow headscarf that I kept looking at, fat blue bugs waiting to hatch. "Nobody stays there for long, I guess?"
"On Sadie's Street?"
She waved her cigarette at the hard pan leading to the deserted parking lot and the vast warehouse filled with nice things she would never own. At the elbow-to-elbow shacks with their steps of crumbling cinder block and their broken windows blocked up with pieces of cardboard. At the roiling kids, at the old rust-eaten Fords and Hudsons and Studebaker Larks. At the unforgiving Texas sky. Then she uttered a terrible laugh filled with amusement and despair.
"Mister, this is a bus stop on the road to nowhere. Me and Bratty Sue's sailing back to Moselle. If Harry won't go with us, we'll sail without him."
I took the map out of my hip pocket, tore off a strip, and scribbled my Jody telephone number on it. Then I added another $5 bill. I held them out to her. She looked, but didn't take.
"What I want your telephone number for?" "I ain't got no goddamn phone."
"That there ain't no DFW change anyway. That's goddamn long distance." "Call me when you get ready to move that. That's all I want. You call me and say, 'Mister, this is Rosette's mama and we're moving.' That's all it is. I could see her calculating. It didn't take her long. $10 was more than her husband would make working all day in the hot Texas sun. Because manpower knew from nothing about time and a half on holidays, and this would be $10 he knew from nothing about.
"Give me another 75 cents, she said, "for the long distance."
"Here, take a buck, live a little. And don't forget."
"I won't."
"No, you don't want to. Because if you forgot, I might just be apt to find my way to your husband and tattle." "This is important business, missus." "To me it is." "What's your name, anyway?"
"Ivy Templeton."
I stood there in the dirt and the weeds, smelling shit, half-cooked oil, and the big farty aroma of natural gas.
"Mister, what's wrong with you? You come over all funny."
"Nothing," I said, and maybe it was nothing. Templeton is far from an uncommon name. Of course, a man can talk himself into anything if he tries hard enough. I'm walking, talking proof of that.
"What's your name?"
"Puddentane," I said. "Ask me again, and I'll tell you the same." At this touch of grammar school raillery, she finally cracked a smile. "You call me, missus."
"Yeah, okay. Go on now. You was to run over that little hell bitch of mine on your way out. You'd probably be doing me a favor."
I drove back to Jody and found a note thumbtacked to my door. "George, would you call me? I need a favor. Sadie." And that's the trouble. Which meant exactly what? I went inside to call her and find out. Coach Borman's mother, who lived in an Abilene nursing home, had broken her hip, and this coming Saturday was the DCHS Sadie Hawkins dance. Coach talked me into chaperoning the dance with him. He said, and I quote, "How can you resist going to a dance that's practically named after you? Just last week this was, and like a fool, I agreed. Now he's going down to Abilene, and where does that leave me? Chaperoning 200 sex-crazed 16-year-olds doing the twist and the filly. I don't think so. What if some of the boys bring beer?" I thought it would be amazing if they didn't, but felt it best not to say so. "Or what if there's a fight in the parking lot? Ellie Doherty said a bunch of boys from Henderson crashed the dance last year, and two of their kids and two of ours had to go to the hospital. George, can you help me out here, please?" Have I just been Sadie Hawkins'd by Sadie Dunhill? I was grinning. The idea of going to the dance with her did not exactly fill me with gloom. "Don't joke. It's not funny." "Sadie, I'd be happy to go with you. Are you going to bring me a corsage?" "I'd bring you a bottle of champagne, if that's what it took." She considered this. "Well, no, not on my salary. A bottle of cold duck, though." "Doors open at 7:30? Actually, I knew they did. The posters were up all over the school. "Right. And it's just a record hop. No band. That's good."
"Why?"
"Live bands can cause problems. I shapped a dance once where the drummer sold homebrew beer at intermission. That was a pleasant experience."
"Were there fights?"
She sounded horrified. Also fascinated.
"Nope, but there was a whole lot of puking. The stuff was spunky."
This was in Florida? It had been at Lisbon High in 2009. So I told her, yes, in Florida. I also told her I'd be happy to co-chaperone the hop.
"Thank you so much, George."
"My pleasure, ma'am." And it absolutely was. The pep club was in charge of the Sadie Hawkins, and they'd done a bang-up job. Lots of crepe streamers wafting down from the gymnasium rafters. Silver and gold, of course. Lots of ginger ale punch, lemon snap cookies, and red velvet cupcakes provided by the future homemakers of America. The art department, small but dedicated, contributed a cartoon mural that showed the immortal Miss Hawkins herself chasing after the eligible bachelors of Dogpatch. Maddie Shaw and Mike's girlfriend, Bobby Jill, did most of the work, and they were justifiably proud. I wondered if they still would be 7 or 8 years from now, when the first wave of women's libbers started burning their bras and demonstrating for full reproductive rights, not to mention wearing T-shirts that said things like, "I am not property," and "A woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle." The night's DJ and master of ceremonies was Donald Bellingham, a sophomore. He arrived with a totally ginchy record collection in not one, but two Samsonite suitcases. With my permission, Sadie just looked bewildered, he hooked up his Webcor phonograph and his dad's preamp to the school's PA system. The gym was big enough to provide natural reverb, and after a few preliminary feedback shrieks, he got a booming sound that was awesome. Although born in Jody, Donald was a permanent resident of Rockville, in the state of Daddy Cool. He wore pink-rimmed specs with thick lenses, belt-in-the-back slacks, and saddle shoes so grotesquely square, they were authentically crazy, man. His face was an exploding zit factory below a Brill Cream-loaded Bobby Rydell duck's ass. He looked like he might get his first kiss from a real-life girl around the age of 42, but he was fast and funny with the mic and his record collection, which he called the Stack of Wax. And Donnie B's round mound of sound was, as previously noted, the ginchiest. "Let's kickstart this party with a blast from the past, a rock and roll relic from the grooveyard of cool, a golden gasser, a platter that matters. Move your feet to the real gong beat of Danny and the Juniors." At the Hop nuked the gym. The dance started, as most of them do in the early 60s, just the girls jitterbugging with the girls. Feet in penny loafers flew, petticoats swirled. After a while, though, the floor started to fill up with boy-girl couples. For the fast dances, at least. More current stuff, like Hit the Road Jack and Quarter to Three. Not many of the kids would have made the cut on Dancing with the Stars, but they were young and enthusiastic, and obviously having a ball. It made me happy to see them. Later, if Donnie B. didn't have the good sense to lower the lights a bit, I'd do it myself. Sadie was nervous at first, ready for trouble, but these kids had just come to have fun. There were no invading hordes from Henderson or any other school. She saw that and began to loosen up a little. After about 40 minutes of nonstop music and 4 red velvet cupcakes, I leaned toward Sadie and said, "Time for Warden Amberson to do his first circuit of the building and make sure no one in the exercise yard is engaged in inappropriate behavior. Do you want me to come with you? I want you to keep an eye on the punch bowl. If any young man approaches it with a bottle of anything, even cough syrup, I want you to threaten him with electrocution or castration, whichever you think might be more effective." She leaned back against the wall and laughed until tears sparkled in the corners of her eyes. "Get out of here, George. You're awful." I went. I was glad I'd made her laugh. But even after 3 years, it was easy to forget how much more effect sexually tinged jokes have in the land of ago. I caught a couple making out in one of the more shadowy nooks on the east side of the gym. He, prospecting inside her sweater, she apparently trying to suck his lips off. When I tapped the young prospector on the shoulder, they leapt apart. "Save it for the bluffs after the dance," I said. "For now, go on back to the gym. Walk slow, cool off, get some punch." They went, she buttoning her sweater, he walking slightly bent over in that well-known male adolescent gait known as the blue ball scuttle. 2 dozen red fireflies winked from behind the metal shop. I waved, and a couple of the kids in the smoking area waved back. I poked my head around the east corner of the wood shop and saw something I didn't like. Mike Coslaw, Jim Ledoux, and Vince Knowles were huddled there, passing something back and forth. I grabbed it and heaved it over the chain-link fence before they even knew I was there. Jim looked momentarily startled, then gave me his lazy football hero smile. "Hello to you too, Mr. A."
Spare me, Jim. I'm not some girl you're trying to charm out of her panties, and I'm most assuredly not your coach. He looked shocked and a little scared, but I saw no offended sense of entitlement in his face. I think that if this had been one of the big Dallas schools, there might have been. Vince had backed away a step. Mike stood his ground, but looked downcast and embarrassed. No, it was more than embarrassment. It was outright shame. A bottle at a record hop? I said. It's not that I expect you to stick to all the rules, but why would you be so stupid when it comes to violating them? Jimmy, you get caught drinking and kicked off the football team. What happens to your Bama scholarship?
Probably get redshirted, I guess, he said. That's all.
Right. And sit out a year. Actually have to make grades. Same with you, Mike. And you'd get kicked out of the drama club. Do you want that? No, sir. Hardly more than a whisper. Do you, Vince?
No, uh-uh. Mr. A, absolutely nitsy.
Are we still going to do the jury one? Because if we are, don't you know enough to shut up when a teacher's scolding you?
Yes, sir, Mr. A.
You boys don't get a pass from me next time, but this is your lucky night. What you get tonight is a valuable piece of advice. Do not fuck up your futures. Not over a pint of five-star at a school dance you won't even remember a year from now. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir, Mike said. I'm sorry.
Me too, Vince said. Absolutely, and crossed himself, grinning. Some of them are just built that way. And maybe the world needs a cadre of smartasses to liven things up. Who knows? Jim?
Yes, sir, he said. Please don't tell my daddy.
Nope, this is between us. I looked them over. You boys will find plenty of places to drink next year at college, but not at our school, you hear me? This time they all said yes, sir. Now go back inside, drink some punch, and rinse the smell of whiskey off your breath. They went. I gave them time, then followed at a distance, head down, hands stuffed deep in pockets, thinking hard. Not at our school, I had said. Ours. Come and teach, Mimi had said. That's what you were meant to do. 2011 had never seemed more distant than it did then. Hell, Jake Epping had never seemed so distant. A growling tenor sax was blowing in a party-lit gym deep in the heart of Texas. A sweet breeze carried it across the night. A drummer was laying down an insidious off-your-seat-and-on-your-feet shuffle. I think that's when I decided I was never going back. The growling sax and Hoochie Coochie drummer were backing a group called the Diamonds. The song was The Stroll. The kids weren't doing that dance, though. Not quite. The Stroll was the first step Christy and I learned when we started going to Thursday night dance classes. It's a two-by-two dance, a kind of icebreaker where each couple jives down an aisle of clapping guys and girls. What I saw when I came back into the gym was different. Here, the boys and the girls came together, turned in each other's arms as if waltzing, then separated again, ending up across from where they had been. When they were apart, their feet went back on their heels, and their hips swayed forward, a move that was both charming and sexy. As I watched from beside the snack table, Mike, Jim, and Vince joined the guy's side. Vince didn't have much. To say he danced like a white boy would be an insult to white boys everywhere. But Jim and Mike moved like the athletes they were, which is to say, with unconscious grace. Pretty soon, most of the girls on the other side were watching them.
I was starting to worry about you, Sadie shouted over the music. Is everything all right out there?
Fine, I shouted back. What's that dance? The Madison. They've been doing it on bandstand all month. Want me to teach you?
Lady, I said, taking her by the arm, I'm going to teach you.
The kids saw us coming and made room, clapping and shouting.
Way to go, Mr. A!
And
show 'em how you work, Miss Dunhill.
Sadie laughed and tightened the elastic holding her ponytail. Color mounted high in her cheeks, making her more than pretty. She got back on her heels, clapping her hands and shaking her shoulders with the other girls, then came forward into my arms, her eyes turned up to mine. I was glad I was tall enough for her to do that. We turned like a wind-up bride and groom on a wedding cake, then came apart. I dipped low and spun on my toes with my hands held out like Al Jolson singing Mammy. This brought more applause and some pre-Beatles shrieks from the girls. I wasn't showing off. Okay, maybe a little. Mostly, I was just happy to be dancing. It had been too long. The song ended, the growling sax fading off into that rock and roll eternity our young DJ was pleased to call the groove yard, and we started to walk off the floor. God, that was fun, she said. She took my arm and squeezed it. You're fun. Before I could answer, Donald blared out through the PA, in honor of two chaperones who can actually dance, a first in the history of our school, here's a blast from the past, gone from the charts but not from our hearts, a platter that matters, straight from my own daddy-o's record collection, which he doesn't know I brought, and if any of you cool cats tell him, I'm in trouble. Dig it, all you steady rockers. This is how they did it when Mr. A and Miss D were in high school. They all turned to look at us, and, well, you know how when you're out at night and you see the edge of a cloud light up a bright gold, you know the moon is going to come out in a second or two. That was the feeling I had right then, standing among the gently swaying crepe streamers in the Denholm Gymnasium. I knew what he was going to play. I knew we were going to dance to it. And I knew how we were going to dance. Then it came, that smooth brass intro, Glenn Miller in the Mood. Sadie reached behind her and pulled the elastic, releasing the ponytail. She was still laughing and beginning to hip sway just a little bit. Her hair slipped smoothly from one shoulder to the other. Can you swing? Raising my voice to be heard over the music, knowing she could, knowing she would. Do you mean like the Lindy Hop? She asked. That's what I mean. Well, go, Miss Dunhill, one of the girls said. We want to see it. And two of her friends pushed Sadie toward me. She hesitated. I did another spin and held up my hands. The kids cheered as we moved out on the floor. They gave us room. I pulled her toward me, and after the smallest of hesitations, she spun, first to the left and then to the right, the A-line of the jumper she was wearing giving her just enough room to cross her feet as she went. It was the Lindy variation Richie from the Ditchy and Bevy from the Levee had been learning that day in the fall of 1958. It was the Hells a-Poppin'. Of course it was, because the past harmonizes. I brought her to me by our clasped hands, then let her go back. We separated. Then, like people who'd practiced these moves for months, possibly to a slowed-down record in a deserted picnic area, we bent and kicked, first to the left, then to the right. The kids laughed and cheered. They had formed a clapping circle around us in the middle of the polished floor. We came together and she twirled like a hopped-up ballerina beneath our linked hands. Now you squeeze to tell me left or right. The light squeeze came on my right hand as if the thought had summoned it, and she whirled back like a propeller, her hair flying out in a fan that gleamed first red, then blue in the lights. I heard several girls gasp. I caught her and went down on one heel with her bent over my arm, hoping like hell that I wouldn't pop my knee. I didn't. I came up. She came with me. She went out, then came back into my arms. We danced under the lights. Dancing is life. The hop ended at 11, but I didn't turn the sunliner into Sadie's driveway until a quarter past midnight on Sunday morning. One of the things nobody tells you about the glamorous job of chaperoning teenage dances is that the chaps are the ones who have to make sure everything's picked up and locked away once the music ends. Neither of us said much on the way back. Although Donald played several other tempting big band jump tunes and the kids pestered us to swing dance again, we declined. Once was memorable. Twice would have been indelible. Maybe not such a good thing in a small town. For me, it already was indelible. I couldn't stop thinking about the feel of her in my arms or her quick breath on my face. I cut the engine and turned to her. Now she'll say, thank you for bailing me out, or thanks for a lovely evening, and that'll be that. But she didn't say either of those things. She didn't say anything. She just looked at me. Hair on her shoulders, top two buttons of the man's Oxford cloth shirt beneath the jumper undone. Earrings gleaming. Then we were together, first fumbling, then holding on tight. It was kissing, but it was more than kissing. It was like eating when you've been hungry or drinking when you've been thirsty. I could smell her perfume and her clean sweat under the perfume, and I could taste tobacco, faint but still pungent, on her lips and tongue. Her fingers slipped through my hair, one pinky tickling for just a moment in the cup of my ear and making me shiver, then locked at the back of my neck. Her thumbs were moving, moving, stroking bare skin at the nape that once in another life would have been covered by hair. I slipped my hand first beneath and then around the fullness of her breast, and she murmured, "Oh, thank you. I thought I was going to fall." "My pleasure," I said, and squeezed gently. We necked for maybe 5 minutes, breathing harder as the caresses grew bolder. The windshield of my Ford steamed up. Then she pushed me away, and I saw her cheeks were wet. When in God's name had she started to cry? "George, I'm sorry," she said. "I can't. I'm too scared." Her jumper was in her lap, revealing her garters, the hem of her slip, the lacy froth of her panties. She pulled the skirt down to her knees. I guessed it was being married, and even if the marriage was busted, it still mattered. This was the mid-20th century, not the early 21st. Or maybe it was the neighbors. The houses looked dark and fast asleep, but you couldn't tell for sure, and in small towns, new preachers and new teachers are always interesting topics of conversation. It turned out I was wrong on both counts, but there was no way I could have known. "Sadie, you don't have to do anything you don't want to. I'm not... You don't understand. It's not that I don't want to. That's not why I'm scared. It's because I never have." Before I could say anything else, she was out of the car and running for the house, fumbling in her purse for her key. She didn't look back. I got home at 20 to 1, walking from the garage to the house in my own version of the blue ball scuttle. I had no more than turned on the kitchen light when the phone began to ring. 1961 is 40 years from caller ID, but only one person would be calling me at such an hour and after such a night. "George, it's me." She sounded composed, but her voice was thick. She had been crying, and hard from the sound. "Hi, Sadie. You never gave me a chance to thank you for a lovely time. During the dance and after. I had a good time, too. It's been so long since I danced. I'm almost afraid to tell you who I learned to Lindy with." "Well," I said, "I learned with my ex-wife. I'm guessing you might have learned with your estranged husband." Except it wasn't a guess. It was how these things went. I was no longer surprised by it. But if I told you I ever got used to that eerie chiming of events, I'd be lying. "Yes." Her tone was flat. "Him. John Clayton of the Savannah Claytons. And estranged is just the right word, because he's a very strange man." "How long have you been married?" "Forever and a day. If you want to call what we had a marriage, that is." She laughed. It was Ivy Templeton's laugh, full of humor and despair. "In my case, forever and a day adds up to a little over 4 years. After school lets out in June, I'm going to make a discreet trip to Reno. I'll get a summer job as a waitress or something. The residency requirement is 6 weeks, which means in late July or early August I'll be able to shoot this joke I got myself into, like a horse with a broken leg. I can wait, I said, but as soon as the words were out of my mouth, I wondered if they were true, because the actors were gathering in the wings, and the show would soon start. By June of 62, Lee Oswald would be back in the USA, living first with Robert and Robert's family, then with his mother. By August, he'd be on Mercedes Street in Fort Worth and working at the nearby Leslie Welding Company, putting together aluminum windows and the kind of storm doors that have initials worked into them. I'm not sure I can. She spoke in a voice so low I had to strain to hear her. I was a virgin bride at 23, and now I'm a virgin grass widow at 28. That's a long time for the fruit to hang on the tree, as they say back where I come from, especially when people, your own mother, for one, assume you started getting your practical experience on all that birds and bees stuff 4 years ago. I've never told anyone that, and if you repeated it, I think I'd die. It's between us, Sadie, and always will be. Was he impotent? Not exact. She broke off. There was silence for a moment, and when she spoke again, her voice was full of horror. George, is this a party line? No. For an extra $350 a month, this baby is all mine. Thank God. But it's still nothing to be talking about on the phone. And certainly not at Al's Diner over prong burgers. Can you come for supper? We could have a little picnic in my backyard. Say around 5. That would be fine. I'll bring a pound cake or something. That's not what I want you to bring. What then? I can't say it on the phone, even if it's not a party line. Something you buy in a drugstore? But not the Jody drugstore. Sadie, don't say anything, please. I'm going to hang up and splash some cold water on my face. It feels like it's on fire. There was a click in my ear. She was gone. I undressed and went to bed, where I lay awake a long time, thinking long thoughts about time and love and death. Chapter 15. At 10 o'clock on that Sunday morning, I jumped into the Sunliner and drove 20 miles to Round Hill. There was a drugstore on the main drag, and it was open, but I saw a "We Roar for the Denholm Lions" sticker on the door and remembered Round Hill was part of Consolidated District 4. I drove on to Killeen. There, an elderly druggist, who bore an eerie but probably coincidental resemblance to Mr. Keene back in Derry, winked at me as he gave me a brown bag and my change. "Don't do anything against the law, son." I returned the wink in the expected fashion and drove back to Jody. I'd had a late night, but when I lay down and tried to nap, I didn't even get in sleep's neighborhood. So I went to the wine gardens and bought a pound cake after all. It looked Sunday stale, but I didn't care and didn't think Sadie would either. Picnic supper or no picnic supper, I was pretty sure food wasn't the number one item on today's agenda. When I knocked on her door, there was a whole cloud of butterflies in my stomach. Sadie's face was free of makeup. She wasn't even wearing lipstick. Her eyes were large, dark, and frightened. For one moment, I was sure she was going to slam the door in my face, and I'd hear her running away just as fast as her long legs would carry her, and that would be that. But she didn't run. "Come on in," she said. "I made chicken salad." Her lips began to tremble. "I hope you like plenty of may." Her knees started to buckle. I dropped the box with the pound cake inside on the floor and grabbed her. I thought she was going to faint, but she didn't. She put her arms around my neck and held tight like a drowning woman to a floating log. I could feel her body thrumming. I stepped on the goddamn pound cake. Then she did. Squish. "I'm scared," she said. "What if I'm no good at it?" "What if I'm not?" This was not entirely a joke. It had been a long time, at least 4 years. She didn't seem to hear me. He never wanted me, not the way I expected, and his way is the only way I know. The touching, then the broom.
Calm down, Sadie. Take a breath.
Did you go to the drugstore?
Yes, in Killeen, but we don't have to.
We do. I do. Before I lose what little courage I have left, come on.
Her bedroom was at the end of the hall. It was Spartan. A bed, a desk, a couple of prints on the walls, chintz curtains dancing in the soft breath of the window air conditioning unit turned down to low. Her knees started to give way again, and I caught her again. It was a weird kind of swing dancing. There were even Arthur Murray footprints on the floor. Pound cake. I kissed her, and her lips fastened on mine, dry and frantic. I pushed her away gently and braced her back against the closet door. She looked at me solemnly, her hair in her eyes. I brushed it away, then very gently began to lick her dry lips with the tip of my tongue. I did it slowly, being sure to get the corners.
Better? I asked. She answered, not with her voice, but with her own tongue. Without pressing my body against hers, I began to very slowly run my hand up and down the long length of her, from where I could feel the rapid beat of her pulse on both sides of her throat, to her chest, her breasts, her stomach, the flat tilted plane of her pubic bone around to one buttock, then down to her thigh. She was wearing jeans, the fabric whispered under my palm. She leaned back and her head bonked on the door.
Ouch! I said, are you all right?
She closed her eyes.
I'm fine. Don't stop. Kiss me some more.
Then she shook her head.
No, don't kiss me. Do my lips again. Lick me. I like that.
I did. She sighed and slipped her fingers under my belt at the small of my back, then around to the front, where the buckle was. I wanted to go fast. Every part of me was yelling for speed, telling me to plunge deep, wanting that perfect gripping sensation that is the essence of the act, but I went slow, at least at first. Then she said, "Don't make me wait. I've had enough of that." And so I kissed the sweaty hollow of her temple and moved my hips forward, as if we were doing a horizontal version of the Madison. She gasped, retreated a little, then raised her own hips to meet me.
Sadie? All right?
Oh, my God, yes,
she said, and I laughed. She opened her eyes and looked up at me with curiosity and hopefulness.
Is it over, or is there more?
A little more, I said. I don't know how much. I haven't been with a woman in a long time. It turned out there was quite a bit more. Only a few minutes in real time, but sometimes time is different, as no one knew better than I. At the end, she began to gasp.
Oh, dear. Oh, my dear. Oh, my dear, dear God. Oh, sugar.
It was the sound of greedy discovery in her voice that put me over the edge, so it wasn't quite simultaneous. But a few seconds later, she lifted her head and buried her face in the hollow of my shoulder. A small fisted hand beat on my shoulder blade once, twice, then opened like a flower and lay still. She dropped back onto the pillow. She was staring at me with a stunned, wide-eyed expression that was a little scary.
"I came," she said.
I noticed.
My mother told me it didn't happen for women, only for men. She said orgasms for women were a myth.
She laughed shakily.
Oh, my God, what she was missing.
She got up on one elbow, then took one of my hands and put it on her breast. Beneath it, her heart was pounding and pounding.
Tell me, Mr. Amberson, how soon before we can do it again?
As the reddening sun sank into the everlasting gas and oil smog to the west, Sadie and I sat in her tiny backyard under a nice old pecan tree, eating chicken salad sandwiches and drinking iced tea. No pound cake, of course. The pound cake was a total loss.
Is it bad for you having to wear those, you know, those drugstore things?
It's fine, I said. It really wasn't. I never had been. There would be improvements in a great many American products between 1961 and 2011, but take it from Jake. Rubbers stay pretty much the same. They may have fancier names and even a taste component for those with peculiar tastes, but they remain essentially a girdle you snap on over your dick.
I used to have a diaphragm, she said. There was no picnic table, so she'd spread a blanket on the grass. Now she picked up a Tupperware container with the remains of a cucumber and onion salad inside it and began snapping the lid open and closed, a form of fidgeting some people would have considered Freudian, including me. My mother gave it to me a week before Johnny and I were married. She even told me how to put it in, although she couldn't look me in the eye, and if you'd flicked a drop of water on one of her cheeks, I'm sure it would have sizzled. Don't start a baby for the first 18 months, she said. 2 years if you can make him wait. That way you can live on his salary and save yours.
Not the world's worst advice. I was being cautious. We were in a minefield. She knew it as well as I did.
Johnny's a science teacher. He's tall, although not quite as tall as you are. I was tired of going places with men who were shorter than me, and I think that's why I said yes when he first asked me out. Eventually, going out with him got to be a habit. I thought he was nice, and at the end of the night he never seemed to grow an extra pair of hands. At the time, I thought those things were love. I was very naive, wasn't I? I made a seesaw gesture with my hand. We met at Georgia Southern and then got jobs at the same high school in Savannah, co-ed but private. I'm pretty sure his daddy pulled a wire or two to make that happen. The Claytons don't have money, not anymore, although they did once, but they're still high in Savannah society. Poor but genteel, you know. I didn't. Questions of who was in society and who wasn't were never big issues when I was growing up. But I murmured in assent. She had been sitting on top of this for a long time and looked almost hypnotized. So I had a diaphragm, yes, I did, in its own little plastic lady box with a rose on the cover. Only I never used it, never had to. Finally threw it in the trash after one of those getting it outs. That's what he called it, getting it out. I have to get it out, he used to say. Then the broom, you see. I didn't see at all. Sadie laughed, and I was again reminded of Ivy Templeton. Wait 2 years, she said. We could have waited 20, and no diaphragm required. What happened? I gripped her upper arms lightly. Did he beat you? Beat you with a broom handle? There was another way a broom handle could be used. I'd read Last Exit to Brooklyn, but apparently he hadn't done that. She'd been a virgin, all right. The proof was on the sheets. No, the broom wasn't for beating. George, I don't think I can talk about this anymore. Not now. I feel, I don't know, like a bottle of soda that's been shaken up. Do you know what I want? I thought so, but did the polite thing and asked. I want you to take me inside and then take the cap off.
She raised her hands over her head and stretched. She hadn't bothered putting her bra back on, and I could see her breasts lift under her blouse. Her nipples made tiny shadows like punctuation marks against the cloth in the late night. She said, I don't want to relive the past today. Today I only want a fizz. An hour later, I saw she was drowsing. I kissed her first on the forehead and then on the nose to wake her up.
I have to go, if only to get my car out of your driveway before your neighbors start to call their friends.
I suppose so. It's the Sanfords next door, and Lila Sanford is this month's student librarian. and I was pretty sure that Lila's father was on the school board, but I didn't say so. Sadie was glowing, and there was no need to spoil that. For all the Sanfords knew, we were sitting on the couch with our knees together, waiting for Dennis the Menace to finish and Ed Sullivan's really big shoe to come on. If my car was still in Sadie's driveway at 11, their perceptions might change. She watched me dress. "What happens now, George? With us?"
"I want to be with you, if you want to be with me." "Is that what you want?"
She sat up, the sheet puddled around her waist, and reached for her cigarettes.
"Very much. But I'm married, and that won't change until next summer in Reno. If I tried for an annulment, Johnny would fight me. Hell, his parents would fight me. If we're discreet, everything'll be fine.
But we have to be discreet. You know that, right?"
She laughed and lit up.
"Oh, yes, I know that. Sadie, have you had discipline problems in the library?"
"Huh?
Some, sure. The usual."
She shrugged. Her breasts bobbed.
I wished I hadn't dressed quite so fast.
On the other hand, who was I kidding? James Bond might have been up for a third go-round, but Jake/George was tapped out.
"I'm the new girl in school. They're testing me. It's a pain in the keister, but nothing I didn't expect. Why?"
"I think your problems are about to vanish. Students love it when teachers fall in love. Even the boys. It's like a TV show to them."
"Will they know that we've..."
I thought about it.
"Some of the girls will. The ones with experience."
She huffed out smoke.
"Great." But she didn't look entirely displeased. "How about dinner out at the Saddle in Round Hill? Get people used to seeing us as a couple."
"All right, tomorrow?"
"No, I have something to do in Dallas tomorrow."
"Research for your book?"
"Mm-hmm."
Here we were, brand new, and I was lying already. I didn't like it, but saw no way around it. As for the future, I refused to think about that now. I had my own glow to protect.
"Tuesday?"
"Yes. And George?"
"What?"
"We have to find a way to keep doing this."
I smiled. "Love will find a way."
"I think this part is more lust."
"It's both, maybe."
"You're a sweet man, George Amberson."
Christ, even the name was a lie.
"I'll tell you about Johnny and me when I can. And if you want to hear..."
"I want to."
I thought I had to. If this was going to work, I had to understand. About her, about him, about the broom.
"When you're ready."
"As our esteemed principal likes to say, students, this will be challenging, but worthwhile."
I laughed. She butted out her cigarette. "One thing I wonder about, would Miss Mimi approve of us?"
"I'm pretty sure she would."
"I think so, too. Drive home safe, my dear. And you better take those."
She was pointing at the paper bag from the Killeen Pharmacy. It was sitting on top of her dresser.
"If I had the kind of nosy company who checks the medicine cabinet after they tee-tee, I'd have some explaining to do."
"Good idea."
"But keep them handy, honey."
And she winked. On the way home, I found myself thinking about those rubbers. Trojan brand, and ribbed for her pleasure, according to the box. The lady didn't have a diaphragm any longer, although I guessed she might arrange for one on her next trip to Dallas, and birth control pills wouldn't be widely available for another year or two. Even then, doctors would be wary about prescribing them if I remembered my modern sociology course correctly. So, for now, it was Trojans. I wore them not for her pleasure, but so she wouldn't have a baby, which was amusing when you considered that I wouldn't be a baby myself for another 15 years. Thinking about the future is confusing in all sorts of ways. The following evening, I revisited Silent Mike's establishment. The sign in the door was turned to closed, and the place looked empty, but when I knocked, my electronics buddy let me in.
"Right on time, Mr. Doe. Right on time," he said. "Let's see what you think." "Me? I think I outdid myself."
I stood by the glass case filled with transistor radios and waited while he disappeared into the back room. He returned holding a lamp in each hand. The shades were grimy, as if they'd been adjusted by a great many dirty fingers. The base of one was chipped, so it stood crooked on the counter, the leaning lamp of Pisa. They were perfect, and I told him so. He grinned and put two of the boxed tape recorders next to the lamps, also a drawstring bag containing several lengths of wire, so thin it was almost invisible.
"Want a little tutorial?"
"I think I've got it," I said, and put 520s down on the counter. I was a little touched when he tried to push one back.
180 was the price we agreed on.
The other 20 is for you to forget I was ever here. He considered this for a moment, then put a thumb on the stray 20 and pulled it into the group with its little green friends.
"I already did that. Why don't I consider this a tip?"
As he put the stuff into a brown paper bag, I was struck by simple curiosity and asked him a question.
"Kennedy? I didn't vote for him, but as long as he doesn't go taking his orders from the Pope, I think he'll be okay. The country needs somebody younger. It's a new age, you know."
"If he were to come to Dallas, do you think he'd be all right?"
"Probably. Can't say for sure, though. On the whole, if I were him, I'd stay north of the Mason-Dixon line."
I grinned. "Where all is calm, all is bright?" Silent Mike, Holy Mike said,
"Don't start."
There was a rack of pigeonholes for mail and school announcements in the first-floor teacher's room. On Tuesday morning, during my free period, I found a small sealed envelope in mine. "Dear George, if you still want to take me to dinner tonight, it'll have to be five-ish, because I'll have early mornings all this week and next, getting ready for the fall book sale. Perhaps we could come back to my place for dessert. I have pound cake, if you'd like a slice. Sadie."
"What are you laughing about, Amberson?"
Danny Laverty asked. He was correcting themes with a hollow-eyed intensity that suggested hangover.
"Tell me, I could use a giggle."
"No," I said. "Private joke. You wouldn't get it." But we got it. Pound cake became our name for it, and we ate plenty that fall. We were discreet, but of course there were people who knew what was going on. There was probably some gossip, but no scandal. Small-town folks are rarely mean folks. They knew Sadie's situation, at least in a general way, and understood we could make no public commitment, at least for a while. She didn't come to my house. That would have caused the wrong kind of talk. I never stayed beyond 10 o'clock at hers. That also would have caused the wrong kind of talk. There was no way I could have put my Sunliner in her garage and stayed the night, because her Volkswagen Beetle, small as it was, filled it almost wall to wall. I wouldn't have done so in any case, because someone would have known. In small towns, they always do. I visited her after school. I dropped by for the meal she called supper. Sometimes we went to Al's Diner and ate prong burgers or catfish fillets. Sometimes we went to the Saddle. Twice I took her to the Saturday night dances at the local Grange. We saw movies at the Gem in town, or at the Mesa in Round Hill, or at the Starlight Drive-In in Killeen, which the kids called the submarine races. At a nice restaurant like the Saddle, she might have a glass of wine before dinner and I might have a beer with, but we were careful not to be seen at any of the local taverns, certainly not at the Red Rooster, Jody's one and only juke joint, a place our students talked about with longing and awe. It was 1961, and segregation might finally be softening in the middle. Negroes had won the right to sit at the Woolworth's lunch counters in Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston, but school teachers didn't drink in the Red Rooster. Not if they wanted to keep their jobs. Never, never, never. When we made love in Sadie's bedroom, she always kept a pair of slacks, a sweater, and a pair of moccasins on her side of the bed. She called it her emergency outfit. The one time the doorbell bonged while we were naked, a state that she had taken to calling in flagrante delicious, she got into those threads in 10 seconds flat. She came back, giggling, and waving a copy of The Watchtower. Jehovah's Witnesses, I told them I was saved, and they went away. Once, as we ate ham steaks and okra in her kitchen afterward, she said our courtship reminded her of that movie with Audrey Hepburn and Gary Cooper, Love in the Afternoon. Sometimes I wonder if it would be better at night, she said this a little wistfully, when regular people do it. You'll get a chance to find out, I said. Hang in there, baby. She smiled and kissed the corner of my mouth. You turn some cool phrases, George. Oh, yes, I said. I'm very original. She pushed her plate aside. I'm ready for dessert. How about you? Not long after the Jehovah's Witnesses came calling at Sadie's place. This must have been early November, because I'd finished casting my version of 12 Angry Men. I was out raking my lawn when someone said, "Hello, George, how's it going?" I turned around and saw Deke Simmons, now a widower for the second time. He had stayed in Mexico longer than anyone had thought he would, and just when folks began to believe he was going to remain there, he had come back. This was the first time I'd seen him. He was very brown, but far too thin. His clothes bagged on him, and his hair, iron gray on the day of the wedding reception, was now almost all white, and thinning on top. I dropped my rake and hurried over to him. I meant to shake his hand, but hugged him instead. It startled him. In 1961, real men don't hug. But then he laughed. I held him at arm's length. "You look great." "Nice try, George. But I feel better than I did. Meme's dying. I knew it was going to happen, but it still knocked me for a loop. Head could never get through to heart on that one, I reckon. Come on in and have a cup of coffee." "I'd like that." We talked about his time in Mexico. We talked about school. We talked about the undefeated football team and the upcoming fall play. Then he put down his cup and said, "Ellen Dougherty asked me to pass on a word or two about you and Sadie Clayton." Uh-oh. And I'd thought we were doing so well. "She goes by Dunhill now. It's her maiden name. I know all about her situation. Knew when we hired her. She's a fine girl, and you're a fine man, George. Based on what Ellie tells me, the two of you are handling a difficult situation with a fair amount of grace." I relaxed a little. "Ellie said she was pretty sure neither of you knew about Candlewood Bungalows, just outside of Killeen. She didn't feel right about telling you, so she asked if I would." "Candlewood Bungalows?" "I used to take memes there on a lot of Saturday nights." He was fiddling at his coffee cup with hands that now looked too big for his body. "It's run by a couple of retired school teachers from Arkansas, or Alabama. One of those A states, anyway. Retired men. School teachers, if you know what I mean." "I think I'm following you, yes." "They're nice fellows, very quiet about their own relationship and about the relationships of some of their guests." He looked up from his coffee cup. He was blushing a little, but also smiling. "This isn't a hot sheet joint, if that's what you're thinking. Farthest thing from it. The rooms are nice, the prices are reasonable, and the little restaurant down the road is country fare. Sometimes a gal needs a place like that, and maybe a man does, too. So they don't have to be in such a hurry, and so they won't feel cheap." "Thank you," I said. "Very welcome. Mimi and I had many pleasant evenings at the Candlewood. Sometimes we only watched the TV in our pajamas and then went to bed, but that can be as good as anything else when you get to a certain age." He smiled ruefully, or almost. "We'd go to sleep listening to the crickets, or
Sometimes a coyote would howl very far away out in the sage. At the moon, you know. They really do that. They howl at the moon.
He took a handkerchief from his back pocket with an old man's slowness and mopped his cheeks with it.